From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the fifth day of May 2017, a Friday afternoon. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker and Brian Stark, along with Ellen Dearden. Actually, they'll join us on our Commodity Week program, but we'll begin that early in our hour-long event for agriculture. If you can stay with us for the whole thing, you'll hear it all. If not, you can always visit us online and listen to Commodity Week at willag.org. Mike Zuzulo is out of the office this afternoon. Instead, we'll talk with Romolo Lolato about this week's wheat quality tour. You know, that number was pretty big, but it's pretty clear there's quite a lot of damage in the Kansas wheat tour crop. And Romolo, who is an extension specialist with K-State Extension, has some thoughts about that. He was, of course, out on the tour. That crop has had a freeze, it's been under snow, and it has disease pressure as well. So we'll hear all about that right here on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Oh, and we'll catch up with the folks at Growth Energy, too. They have some thoughts about E15. You can hear it right here again at willag.org, willag.org.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
This is the Closing Market Report for a Friday afternoon. Mike Zuzulo is not available this afternoon, but we have an update from the Wheat Quality Tour, an interesting tour that happened all this week. Romolo Lolato is here. He's an extension specialist in wheat and forage for Kansas State University and was out on the tour. Thanks, Romolo, for being with us. Can you tell me about what I figure was a really interesting week?
I thought, yes, well, thanks for having me on air here today. The final numbers that the tour came up with was a total production of 282 million bushels for the state of Kansas. And again, it's good to remember that production is actually an average of everyone's guess in the end of the tour, right? So, and in my opinion, it is a year where it's very challenging to have a guess. We have so many different things going on in Kansas that it's really hard to pinpoint where we're going to be here in about a month whenever we start with harvest. And the reason I say it is challenging is because we have many different concerns throughout the state, depending where in the state we are. And what are some of the different things that we saw throughout the state? Back on April 27th, or Thursday, a week from today, we had a pretty damaged freeze for the majority of central Kansas. So we were able to start to see some of the effects of those low temperatures that we observed, especially in north central Kansas. So as we left Manhattan going west, we around that Clay County and Republic County area in Kansas, we were seeing some crops that were at boot stage or early heading stages during the freeze, that now were completely headed, and the anthers really were looking very healthy. We were seeing some mushy and white looking anthers, which is indicative that we will see some freeze damage in that part of the state, so not more central portion of the state.
Right. So we've talked about the freeze here, and then of course there was the snow. It was in the western part of the state.
Let's just remind whoever are listening to this program that it really May 1st is very unusual to have 18 inches of snow, right? So most of the crop out in western Kansas was really under snow, the western three tiers of counties, and really difficult for us to get a solid estimate of what's going to happen from here on. And the reason I say that is because in northwest Kansas, the majority of the crop was at boot stage, under snow, so many broken stems. As we were inspecting these fields, there were a lot of broken stems. Some stems weren't broken, and those would probably get back and maybe still produce some grain, provided that the cold didn't result in spikelet infertility there. So there are several things that can go on from here on. One, in that snow-covered area, is just the mechanical damage from breaking the stems. And two, is also possible freeze damage, just the damage from the cold temperatures that the crop was exposed to for a long period of time.
So let me repeat that really quickly. You believe the damage mostly, and we've seen some of this on the Wii Quality Tour, was from breakage, that meaning it simply broke off, or two, that the cold temperatures might impact that crop as well. Anything else from that part of the world?
I believe this was even a worse situation as we moved to southwest Kansas, because the crop was further along in southwest Kansas. A lot of the region was already at anthesis or flowering, and that's when the crop is most sensitive to any type of freeze damage. And also to stem breaking. So whenever the stem breaks, that stress is imposed after flowering. The yield loss is going to be greater from that as well. So really the majority of that southwest Kansas, I think we might see quite a bit of yield damage from the combination of snow and cold.
So you've taken us through the northern part of Kansas. What about those southern counties?
As we started moving back east, covering that southern tier of counties in Kansas, the situation improved, so the crop was looking better in that south-central region. Some yield estimates coming about 60, 70 bushels per acre, which I think in some cases will be realized. But another problem that we ran into that southern tier of counties was two things. One, many crops were looking nitrogen deficient, a really light green and short crop because of that nitrogen deficiency in the majority of the field. And reasons for that are probably the low wheat price. So producers are less likely to invest in a crop when the price is so low. And also many parts of Kansas, we had over 30 inches of precipitation during the growing season. And the other problem that we were seeing in south central Kansas, also because of this amount of precipitation that we have had, is fields showing signs of waterlogging. So those large circles in the field that are just white because of anaerobic conditions, and it really kills those circles within the crop.
Well, this doesn't really sound all that optimistic. However, the crop tour showed 282 million bushels. Is that number not right?
So with all those things that I mentioned, that's why I say that, well, we reached that 282 million bushels production, but that can be a very wide range. Depends on the fate of the crop in western Kansas. The area affected by the snowfall is about 40% of Kansas wheat production, so of Kansas wheat planted area. And in that 40%, it's very uncertain what's going to happen at this point. We can have a 50% yield loss, we can have a 25% or a 75% yield loss. We don't know yet at this point. We need at least a good maybe 7 or 10 days to really be able to have a better feeling of what's going to happen in that very important wheat producing region of the state. So I guess in the end, we came up with an estimated yield that might happen in fields that are not abandoned, but I believe we might see a lot of abandonment in western Kansas, especially because of both wheat streak mosaic virus and the snowfall conditions. So I believe at this point, it's still pretty uncertain where the crop's going to go from here. It really depends on how good it will recover from all these damaging events that we had in the last week.
Well, Romolo, it sounds like we'll need to call and talk with you again in 7 to 10 days to see really where the wheat crop in the western part of Kansas is. One quick question. If those acres are abandoned, how will they be abandoned? One of our brokers here suggested that might be through grazing or graze out. And if they are, will they replant it to another crop? And in that area, will it be mostly milo?
That is a good question, Todd. And I believe we are seeing already a lot of graze out happening. Right. So even before the snow, as I was running throughout the state, I was seeing, especially in the southern portion, quite a bit of graze out happening. So I think producers are seeing more value on producing beef rather than wheat. And I can see that working out in many conditions, depending on the wheat yield potential. Possibly out in western Kansas, the profile, there's a lot of moisture in the profile. So I think producers would be off to a good start, at least in going with milo in western Kansas or other summer crops like corn or soybeans in central Kansas. Might be getting late for corn planting, but they might still be able to go with a soybean crop. So I think we might be seeing, especially out west, some Milo going in some of these stands that were really damaged by the snow.
And of course is Romolo Lolato. He's a specialist in wheat and forages for Kansas State Extension. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason. Earlier in the week, while I was in Washington, D.C., I spoke with Chris Hogan. He's the Vice President of Communications and Public Affairs for Growth Energy. It's a Washington, D.C.-based lobbying organization. Growth Energy is pushing E15. I asked Chris Hogan how consumer acceptance was going.
Well, E15 is already approved by EPA as a fuel. So in that sense, it's out there. What we're seeing is that a lot of people just don't understand ethanol fuels. So they know unleaded, generic unleaded. What they don't necessarily all know is that it's already 10% ethanol. E15 is an approved fuel that's actually perfectly fine for 9 out of 10 cars on the road. And what a lot of people are concerned about is that they have a general misunderstanding about ethanol to begin with. We've, of course, been always in a kind of a back and forth with oil companies that really don't want ethanol in the fuel. And so a lot of the messaging that's gotten out there is that ethanol is bad for your engine, it's bad for your car, when the facts are basically the opposite. On top of that, a lot of people who we're trying to identify as the audience who we do need to talk to are folks who don't really know anything about fuel. They're not agriculture people. They're not necessarily engine people. And that's who we've been doing a lot of talking to previously. Important audiences. But when we did consumer research, we found out that the folks who we need to talk to who are going to be making decisions, household purchasing decisions, are women, millennials, people who are concerned about the environment, a lot of people who live on the East Coast. And they really don't know anything other than the rumors that they've heard. So what we're trying to do is essentially reintroduce ethanol fuels to America. And that's why having those kind of conversations with an audience we haven't traditionally talked to is really proving to be a positive. And consumers are demanding it when they have access and they learn about it. And retailers are starting to respond, which is why E15 is now available in over 800 outlets in 29 states.
So I'm thinking about this a little bit, trying to convince myself that you need to have these conversations based off what I know about the E10 and its ability to be moved to the infrastructure in the gasoline supply system for the United States. So it sounds to me that as if you're trying to build a demand base, are you targeting that in certain areas? You said 29 states. I would think Minnesota is not a state you necessarily have to target, but I may very well be wrong. Are you targeting particular areas where you really would like folks to begin to think about using E15?
Yeah, we're certainly doing that. But to your point also, we're still focusing on those states where you'd think people are familiar with it, it's already available. What we're still trying to do is make sure that everyone in those markets really hears what we're saying, knows that it's available, building the relationships with those retailers that are in markets like a Minnesota, like Iowa, but still moving out to other markets as well in terms of education and making people or giving people the opportunity to become more familiar. Certain markets where Prime the Pump is already active, that's where we're doing a lot of the direct targeting, working with retailers that either carry E15 in other markets or are open to carrying E15. You know, we just announced Casey's last week, and Quick Trip came on, we just announced today, where they're going to be selling it in about 100 different outlets as well.
Are you using primarily blender pumps in these areas to put E15 into the vehicles, or do they have segregated pumps for E15?
For the most part, it's blender pumps, but it also depends on the retailer. There are a lot of different formats. So in that case, it tends to be what's going on at that retail location.
But key, it sounds to me, is the fact that consumers demand, relatively speaking, the E15 as an available supply that they can use.
Well, it's both. It's consumers, but it's also the retailers saying, I know what my consumer wants, and I'm comfortable saying, I'm going to offer this product and see how it goes. Now, whenever it is offered, consumers are responding, and the retailers are looking at it and saying, what incentives, what advertising, what options do I need to put out there to get the consumer to the pump? But when they're getting to the pump, they are choosing E15, and that's what we're seeing.
That's Chris Hogan. He's with Growth Energy, a lobbying organization out of Washington, D.C. that works on behalf of ethanol. Now, let's turn our attention to the weather forecast. Eric Snodgrass is here. He's from Agrible in Champaign, Illinois. Eric, thanks for being with us. Can you tell me about a better weather forecast?
Well, Todd, the good news is that the rain has finally stopped, at least temporarily. I'm looking right now at a map that shows the total accumulated precipitation over the last 2 weeks. And the southern half of Illinois has had 5+ inches of rain. Now, in fact, the whole state of Illinois has had at least 2 inches of rain. Indiana, same story. But in Missouri, in parts of southern Illinois, northern Arkansas, and eastern Oklahoma, and parts of southeastern Kansas, that stretch right in through there has seen better than 10 inches of rain. In fact, the only place really in the Corn Belt that has not seen incredible amounts of rainfall over the last couple of weeks has been the Dakotas, but it's been too cold there for them to make much progress with their planting. Now, speaking of cold, we're going to be watching this in the forecast over the next few days. You see, we have a pretty deep trough in the jet stream over the eastern half of the country, and while that keeps temperatures cool, I am starting to get concerned into Sunday morning and in Monday morning that we could have lower 30-degree temperatures and potentially a frost in parts of Indiana, Ohio, Michigan, Wisconsin, and Pennsylvania. So we're talking some pretty late cold weather in terms of the spring season. But behind that trough, the Central Plains gets to finally warm up as a ridge builds through the central part of the country. We're going to see 80-degree temperatures in the same locations that last week we saw a blizzard. So it's incredible to see how diverse and how quickly weather can change in the United States when it is spring. Now let's start talking about precipitation. The western and northern corn belts will get a few days to dry down, but the pattern is far from shutting down entirely and drying out. You see, in the big picture, we have what's called the negative phase of the North Atlantic Oscillation. Now, all of that means that we're going to be building a big ridge in the jet stream over Greenland and over the northern latitudes in North America. Now, what that does is that displaces some cooler air to the south that favors troughing in the jet stream over the eastern half of the country. And we know that troughs are synonymous with unsettled weather, and they're synonymous with cooler weather. Now, here's kind of the layout over the coming days. We're going to stay cooler than average, I think, over the next 10 days on the whole. And as a big consequence of that cooler weather, this is going to result in a slowdown in the accumulation of those growing degree day units, which we need early in the season. So instead of having temperatures in the 70s, we're going to be seeing a lot of temperatures in the upper 50s and 60s for highs across the central part of our corn belt. Now, we're also going to be seeing repeated low-pressure systems moving across the country. So let's talk about those kind of in sequence. Yeah, we do get a couple of days over this weekend where most of the Corn Belt's going to get a bit of a dry down. But model forecasts that came out late over the night last night and early this morning are showing a first system that's going to track from Wisconsin through the eastern part of Illinois and then eventually dip down into parts of Indiana, kind of sagging from the northwest to the southeast. Basically, this is a disturbance on the backside of that bigger trough that we have to be watching. In addition to this, models are pointing at another system that's going to emerge on Tuesday into Wednesday of next week that we have to keep our eye on. And what we're seeing in that forecast is a large band of light, scattered precipitation that's going to try to stretch right through the central part of the Corn Belt, rather narrow from north to south, but it's going to be there. This is not going to be like the systems we saw last week and this week, which dumped enormous amounts of rainfall. It's unorganized, which means it's not revolving around a large low-pressure system, but we have to be on the lookout for some more showers and storms with that system. But the bigger deal happens on May 10th and 11th. This is Wednesday into Thursday of next week. We have a system that's going to emerge out of Oklahoma and Kansas. The good news is this one tries to track farther to the south and east compared to the last two systems. But the problem is it's going to bring its northerly kind of edge of the precipitation shield across parts of Missouri and Illinois and southern Indiana that just got hammered. And so this is, again, another system coming through bringing more precipitation. And I'll be honest with you, I feel horrible for those people in those fields that are in Missouri, southern Illinois, southern Indiana, parts of Arkansas that have just been hammered. The pictures, they're hard to watch. They're hard to look at simply because we're seeing lakes where there was once, you know, fields full of corn and soybeans and other crops. So we got to look for something big to shut this down. And right now, at least over the next 10 days, I'm not seeing much of a shift. And that is largely in part to what's going on in the jet stream over Greenland. Just shows you how interconnected our atmosphere is.
Thanks, Eric. Eric Snodgrass, of course, is with Agrible, joins us here on the Closing Market Report for this Friday afternoon. If you can, stay with us. Coming up next, Commodity Week, or at least the rest of it. It's already up on our website. If you cannot, you can hear it at willag.org. Many of these radio stations tomorrow. Our panelists this week include Dan Zwicker, Ellen Dearden, and Brian Stark. Commodity Week, our weekly look at what's happened in the world of commodity agriculture. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason.